Welcome back to the Black Is Break with yours truly, KC Layman. We have a lovely, lovely roundtable in the house tonight. Tonight's guests are Sheba, Malcolm Darrell, Leisha Mack, Merc 80, Django.
Hold up. How come I'm the only one without an alias? Dang it.
Chris, it is KC, a.k.a. Lady Egypt, and welcome to the Cleopatra Club. Tonight, we are talking about Django Unchained. Oh, my goodness. This week, the family went out to go see this movie. And mind you, earlier in the year, we discussed the idea of Django when we got hold of the script and information about it. And I can speak for myself. I was adamantly kind of against the idea of Tarantino doing this film steeped in slavery. But I have to say, after seeing the film, I enjoyed it. I was entertained. I'm going to leave it at that and let the people at the table say what they must. What did y'all think, family? What did we think of this film?
Let me get on this mic really quick before it gets heated on here. This is Brother Malcolm, and I will say my initial thoughts. Well, first of all, let's just say that the first scene where, let's just clarify that I love all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles. But that was a joke, but nobody got it. It was delivery. I just want to say that I found myself clapping in the movie theater on certain violent moments, and I don't know what that's about, but I enjoyed it. Partly is because I just feel like this movie was quintessential Tarantino. If you're a fan of Tarantino, I told somebody today, I said, to me, it was a mix of Kill Bill and Pulp Fiction in a period piece. And I felt like all the elements that you come to expect in a Quentin Tarantino film, the gore, the amazing cinematography, the angles, the brilliant soundtrack, are all there. And then the spaghetti western and the idea of the hero at the end of the piece, because there's always seems to be a hero in his movies. The one criticism I do have of the piece, and I'm just going to put this out there, is I felt, well, first of all, I was one of those people who was concerned about, like, the trailer, because the first trailer I saw, Jamie had a line up, and I'm like, that's not period. Where you get a line up back in 1848? But I got over that because I'm in the theater and, like, you know, the details for me are very, you know. But there's two things I had an issue with. When the Golden Globe nominations came out, before I even saw the movie, it was curious to me that all of the white people in the movie were nominated, but none of the black people. So I was like, oh, I really want to see this, because I'm like, well, are they just terrible? And I have to say, the way the script is written, all of the white people save Samuel Jackson, they all have a chance to shine as brilliant actors. Django doesn't really have lines that are like, he's not really developed as a character. You know what his mission is as a character, is to go get his woman. His woman never really speaks. And then the only time you have the Negro with the most lines is the antagonist. And that's Samuel Jackson's character, who, that's a whole nother part of this conversation we're going to get into.
Yeah.
But I do want to say that it just was very frustrating to me. And I was like, you know what? Of course Leonardo DiCaprio is going to get nominated. Of course, I forget his name. Wasn't it Chris? Because he was great. But their roles allowed them to shine. The script was written to allow them to shine. And I just, that really started to bother me. But overall, as a piece of cinema, I thought it was well done.
Okay, this is Chris. I went into it. Kim had her reservations at first and was very adamant that I'm not seeing this fucking slavery. She was feeling like Spike Lee when she heard reading the initial, and
that
we
was
could
back
understand
in
why.
January.
Right. But when it came out and we saw more of the trailers, and I was like, okay, this is not a Nat Turner thing, because that's what it felt like. Okay, and all right, I can deal. I can handle this. And, you know, for those who can't handle it, well, those who have not seen the movie and plan to see it, turn this off right now, yeah, if you haven't already. But for those who've seen it, yeah, like Michael said, it's a Tarantino film. It was very enjoyable. It was a lot of blood. You know, you get to see the black dude kill some white folk, you know, which, given the fact
happens,
of where that, when that period is, the fact that, you know how much of a relief, like a joy that would be to be like, all of this. I mean, you see from the very beginning, there are, you know, when you see him take off Jamie's chains, he throws that in there where you're like, all right, this is some slavery wasn't cool at fuck all. Like, this is some straight brutal shit. You know, you see the black men take off their robes and they all beaten. You know, it's shocking. But yes, the hero movie is great. I'm not going to mention Samuel Jackson yet because it's Michael Starr. I'm going to wait because that's... He as soon as he came on, he was on it. He was on it.
Yeah.
You know, of course, he made me think of Uncle Ruckus. Except he doesn't hate black people as much as Uncle Ruckus just hates being around black people. He played the
save it.
Yeah, that's my opinion.
What I thought,
I thought it was Uncle Ruckus' grandfather. I said, but I was like, Uncle Ruckus was straight on. Hey, but yes, awesome movie. And yeah, Leo, I mean, for what he had to deal with, basically using the N-word and hearing he was uncomfortable, and they had to actually like help him get through it because he did his role well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
I saw the interview with Jamie Foxx with Oprah, and it's funny to hear him talk about the interview, the preparation he and Miss Washington, I'll call her now, Carrie. She's evolved from Carrie to Miss Washington. That they had to go through a lot of mental preparation. He said, he jokingly said that they had to put on their nigger shield because they were on set and they heard niggas so much and they had to protect themselves from responding or just even reacting. What I also thought was interesting is how they prepped us for it, I guess, because BET ran Roots like freaking crazy. Yes.
And Queen.
So it was like this was planned, and then you were going to go see Django. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know how I feel about it. It was entertaining. I'm still a little mixed. I don't know if it's like borderline mockery. Like, I don't know why he made the movie. I would like to know, like, you know, Quentin, why? What were your thoughts behind doing it? And I know you said you had heard something a little bit, but I want to, you know, I'd like to tap into him and see what was his purpose. Was it just purely entertainment? Was it, you know, giving us a breath of fresh air because we got to see the white man get beat, which Jamie was pointing out, you know, it's one of the first times we've ever seen in a film where the slave actually turns around and actually whips, you know, the white man with the whip, you know. But just talking and seeing Kerry Washington's interview and how Kerry Washington said they prepped for it. It was like, interesting enough, her and Jamie Foxx were very conscious of going in, respecting the topic. So I was expecting something differently because they wanted to go through the process. They didn't want it to be, sugar-coated for them. And they were really like, handling it with kids' gloves going in as actors. They wanted to make sure that they respected it. But then when I saw it, I was like, well, you know, I don't know if all of that sensitivity and that respect was necessarily needed because what I saw on camera wasn't the roles and everything. I didn't feel like, I don't know.
So, no, you said she took the lash for real.
She took the lash for real. She noticed on the set, like, they were filming, I believe, in South Carolina is where they did the filming on a real plantation. One of the trees there was, like, bare, and they wanted to know, like, you know, why does that tree look like that? And it was actually a tree that they used for lynching. So the way she and Jamie talked about it before I saw the movie, in their interviews, they both spoke as though they were actors or actresses, approaching this with a lot of respect for the conversation and a lot of sensitivity. But then when I saw the movie, I'm like, well, you know, it was different. I don't know if you had to go in that deep.
Well, they're artists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there was a definite balance of Tarantino's usual humor dealing with some really serious, serious topics. Because to me, he had the same sort of thing going on with Inglourious Basterds.
Exactly.
I mean, you're talking about another American, or not even American, another just a travesty, a world travesty. And he still injects humor in there. And with this one, he, like Chris said, he did not cut corners showing the brutality of slavery. Sans saving us from actually seeing a rape scene. He did not do a rape scene, which I was surprised. I expected that. But like from the damage from the shackles to just the shackles that they were wearing, these huge shackles with the
covering of the face.
Yeah, and things sticking out and their bodies. And for me, the most difficult scene to watch was the Mandingo fight. I thought that was
It was probably
the hardest one to watch for me. Just because I was telling Chris, where my mind went, I kept thinking to myself, what if these two men were brothers or friends? And when this actually happened in slavery, how often was brother pitted against brother, you know, to fight to the death? How crazy is that? You know, and so the brutality of that was not to be missed. And the fact that on the part of the slave owner, it was
entertainment.
Yeah, watching the dog fight, watching TV. It was like no big deal at all whatsoever. That part of it was really, really painful. But Tarantino, that's just his style, to take something really, really serious and add a layer of humor over it, which makes it, I think, more digestible.
And I think we have to just be very careful about making sure that we don't view this with the lens of this being some type of history lesson.
Right, because it was not historically accurate.
He is... nor was Inglourious Basterds historically accurate.
Right.
And, you know, I'll just read the quote. You know, Spike Lee said, all I'm going to say is it's disrespectful to my ancestors. That's just me. I'm not speaking on behalf of anybody else. And then he tweeted, American slavery was not a Sergio Leone spaghetti western. It was a Holocaust. My ancestors are slaves stolen from Africa. I will honor them. And I agree with him. At the same time, I don't think it was his intent to be disrespectful of American history at all. I think he has a certain aesthetic, and that is what he is. That's his wheelhouse that he is operating in. Part of me, because I'm one of those black people that gets really sensitive around issues of race, and as we should be, but part of it is, you know, there's some things that happen in this movie that I think are very interesting and do turn a mirror on like black people. Like, I think it's hilarious that he chooses his outfit and what he chose to come out in, because I'm like, Negroes like to shine. We like to shine, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And let's not get it twisted. Samuel L. Jackson's character was prevalent and is prevalent today.
Right.
And that those are real characters, those are real people. But this is a movie, and so a part of it is entertainment. Mm-hmm. Some people could say I'm completely offended by the violence that's in this movie, given what coming off of Newtown, Connecticut, and that we just don't need to glorify violence in this way.
But that's slavery.
But it's slavery, right? But it's also American history, and it's also race is just is a hard thing for America to do. We don't really talk about it really well. And to me, if this is a conversation starter, you know, I sat there around white people and I was clapping during the scenes where they were getting beat. Yes,
where'd you sit?
I saw Arclight Hollywood. And may I say, don't ever go to Arclight Hollywood during the holiday period, which I'm thinking holidays is the Christmas and New Year's. There is a period where the movies all day, all long are $16. I am boycotting for the rest of my life. But anyway, $6 rave, holla, shit, went with the Black Kids family. But I was sitting with a lot of white people and I did. Audibly clap and yell, because some people actually started clapping with me, because I was just like, first of all, it's a Tarantino film, so it's like you're kind of encouraged to be like, yeah. I mean, I did the same thing in Kill Bill.
Right.
It's just exciting because you feel like you're watching. It is. It's a different genre of action flick, action film, hero film. So, but yeah, I just wanted to clarify, like, making sure that people don't look at this as if it's like a PBS documentary or a Spike Lee film, because Spike Lee, of course, would not take the same take on this, and this is not Spike Lee's story. Yes.
Spike is about the message, and that definitely, I don't think, was Tarantino's point. And I wanted to add, I feel like he also put a mirror on white people during that time period too, because that Ku Klux Klan scene was probably one of the funniest scenes in the whole film, because it's like, how stupid is this?
Right.
You know, and I feel like he put a flashlight on them too.
I think that Spike needs to take his foot out of his mouth, first of all. You know, he did a movie centered on minstrels.
Yeah.
And that movie was more offensive to me than anything Quentin Tarantino could have ever done. You know, what was that movie
called? Bamboozled.
Bamboozled. Oh my goodness. Now that was a hard movie for me to watch.
Yeah, that was hard. That was hard to watch.
He was making a straight point.
He did make a point, but I don't think he's in a position to criticize this movie just based on. I think that Spike has put himself in a position and then do the right thing. There were more niggas and bitches and everything else, you know, mouthing that movie, and stereotypes, not just black, but of all cultures, you know. And There were stereotypes of Italian Americans, Jews in his movies, and I think he believes he's the only one qualified to speak on behalf of black people in a cinema setting, and I don't think that's the case, because he does cross over into other people's territories. The other thing that was very interesting to me is that how Tarantino found a way to go against some of the stereotypes within the black community, and that one of the main issues was that the house nigger wasn't a light-skinned brother. But the other thing...
Neither was Sheba.
Yeah, most of them.
And neither was Sheba. But the other thing, in Samuel Jackson's defense... Did you guys pick up on how he had more intelligence and the ability to pick up on the tomfoolery that was going on?
Uh-huh.
And Leonardo DiCaprio could not believe that, he didn't catch it.
Right.
And then did you see how the hands on the farm were just a bunch of ignorant ass white men who couldn't speak?
Yes.
And in spite of their deficiencies, they were still put in charge and viewed as... a superior. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so I picked up on a lot of subtle things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the other things I picked up on was, of course, how quick we are to turn on one another. And when given the opportunity to, shine in certain settings, I hope that's not the case. Or I hope that's not as prevalent as it once was, or as I understand it once was. But I enjoy the movie. And I think with the exception of Roots, it's been a long time since we've been given a movie in a slavery setting. Although some of the depictions weren't accurate, I think it's been a long time since we've given a movie in that setting that can actually be entertaining. There was a movie that Denzel did during the Civil War. I forget what that was.
Glory.
Right, and then Amistad, yeah. I thought it was brilliant, and I'm the new light skinned Django, by the way.
And it's funny, Merk and I were having this conversation before the podcast started about the fact that I was saying I don't think our generation needs another Roots necessarily. No. I don't even think we could digest getting that story that heavy yet and again.
No, we need the modern day, and I'm not to go on this tangent, but what our generation, what generations after us need is a modern day Roots in which we talk about enslavement of the mind and not the physical enslavement.
Mm.
Because right now the enslavement that's happening in our communities is
how do you jump to that?
That's not my job, but there's a brilliant filmmaker who can make that connection. That to me is the brilliance of the creativity of filmmakers, is that.
Yeah, but we're talking about this, Malcolm, so I'm saying, I mean, hypothetically, how do you do that? How does one jump?
I mean, well, first of all, it's like that was about enslavement of your mind, but it's like you choose a setting. Choose school.
Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Choose a setting where you see people not. I'm sorry.
How do you do that without being derogatory? I'm not asking you to lay out a plan, but I'm just saying, how do you do that without being derogatory? How do you create a setting where you show young black people who, have nothing to look forward to, have very little hope and don't understand where they come from, and as a result don't understand where they're going, without, first of all, creating a situation where there's just constant criticism, and then without being derogatory.
I was going to say the last thing to actually do that on television that would be modern day would probably be The Wire, in terms of showing
that was an accurate depiction,
right? Though. And the actual like the season with the children in the high school,
mm-hmm.
like that, something like that, yeah. Slavery, that
demonstrated what happens on a day-to-day basis, but how it doesn't go toward trying to solve the problem. And I do think Roots needs to be reiterated, because the fact of the matter is, like, we were watching Roots on Christmas, and my children are, do we have to watch this again? Yes, you do. Yes, you do have to watch it, unfortunately, because we did. And it's a lot to digest all at once. It is. back to back. Generations and generations of torture. Did this really happen? Yes, it did. Now, you know, maybe it could be, because I think the closest thing the world has to compare to slavery is a Holocaust.
Yeah.
But it's still not the same.
No. I think what was really interesting was when Oprah was interviewing Jamie Foxx and she made a connection about slavery and the Holocaust. And the Holocaust, she said, was a machine created to just get rid of a whole race of people, whereas slavery was the machine created to make a whole race of people feel inferior. And she said she's not, yeah, and she said, I was not necessarily offended how some people talk about, you know, let's not talk about slavery. She said, because there's another perspective to it, is looking at it and saying, what are people survived? Because this machine was created to make us all feel inferior, right, and like you said, make a profit off of it. But look what our ancestors survived.
Slavery, I think slavery did its job in that it completely stripped us of our dignity, of our culture, of our religion, of our practices, and basically created a whole new race of people, right?
Absolutely.
But in creating that new race of people, they did create inferior people. We spend our lives and our children's lives working against that inferiority complex, because that is what the status quo is across the world, is that black people are inferior to you, or anything that's dark skinned is inferior. So in some respects, slavery has done its job. Now, granted, there's not a physical slavery, but that's where you have to be careful with oppression, particularly in American context, because we're such visual people that we think if it doesn't look like that anymore, then everything must be okay. That's why people think we live in a post-racial America, because we have a black man in the White House, so everything must be fine. No, there's underlying issues in our communities, the way our children see themselves, our obsession with getting rich, meaning we are poor, so we all want to get rich. So our obsession with that has stolen. So basically all of our artistry now goes into creating a certain type of music that's about getting rich and not being poor. And you're like, well, what about the artists who could do this, 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 or be a chemist, or be this or that, right? So to me, there are lasting effects of slavery that we... I mean, that's a whole other conversation, but I'm not sure how we're constantly fighting against that. The point I'm trying to make.
Well, I would say, to your point, real quick, to get back on time, but we would need to show those. I mean, Django's a fictional character, but show the real people who actually have survived and went on and actually did better than what we thought. You know, there is the scene in the movie where he's basically saying that, you know, blacks aren't intelligent, basically.
The brain.
Yeah.
The $3.
We don't have
the,
now,
hold on, man. You don't have to see that movie.
The
fact that we're here is
no, but
proof.
I mean, the fact, I'm agreeing with you with Roots, because I can say I'm pissed off at BET because
they haven't shown
when that. When it hit 25 years, it should have been on, period. It's funny, when I saw the Dave Chappelle skit, then I was like, wow, I'm surprised they actually did not do this when it hit. Hey, 25 years of Roots, let's put it on. It's been here 25 years. You know, we celebrating Bad Michael Jackson 25 years. But I mean, like, hey, this movie was revolutionary, that was on television.
But what I'm saying is that you hear about Holocaust survivors and, you know, mm-hmm. they're praise, but what you have to understand is that the fact that we are here today must mean that we are
survived.
Of slavery.
We are. I'm agreeing with that. I just wish it was put
our
out there more often.
And we've dropped the ball in many ways, right, because what they've survived, what they came through, I think we've dropped the ball in many ways in where we are supposed to be and what we should be.
I think we've made strides, though. Like, I don't want to discount where we are.
Right.
Because if we were to really consider where we're supposed to be, we're descendants of chattel slavery. So technically, we should still be enslaved. And we can always make the argument for mental slavery. But the other thing that I also want us to keep in mind, at least, and I say this for me because I am really militant and I have a tendency to be really judgmental when I'm looking at the other side. At least I have been a story. historically, and it still bites me every now and again, is that everybody is kind of a victim of their time and circumstance. So for those white folks who operated and believed for the Calvin Candies of the world, who is a generation, you know, he comes from a generation of slave owners. Mm-hmm. He does not, a man like that does not know better. It's, he's learned because that's what's been
taught
to him.
Yeah, he inherited.
You know,
that.
That's right. What's been brought down to him. And his idea of what success looks like and what family looks like and all that kind of stuff is ingrained in him the same way we've learned the things that we've learned from, you know, our people. And so it's not to at all discount the travesty of slavery or even take off any responsibility of how we were treated. But I think we've come as a people so far. I think what scares us, though, is that we do see a generation, like Darius has mentioned, that is getting further and further removed from the history. And I think we need to ask ourselves why. It might be because when we talk about the artistic way that history has been represented, it is just not digestible for them.
And it's not just black kids, it's American.
It's all
culture.
The kids, because the white kids don't want to see it either. And so it's
they
it's,
don't know their own history either.
Right. This
you
is true.
You can't hit somebody over the head with a 9-part miniseries, you know, and tell them to digest true. It.
Right.
There's very little mention of slavery in the American history book.
Right.
Right.
You know. But I wanted to go off on a tangent kind of because I wanted to ask you all, what does someone in my position do when you're not the direct product of a biracial marriage, but you're obviously, you know, the product of biracial relationships? A non-slavery master goes out and rapes the slave type situation. You know, should I feel conflicted?
No. I have that same issue. I have that same lineage.
Right. Because just like, I mean, I don't feel as strongly about it as Brother Wood does. You know,
right.
I'm white. I'm black. No, I'm black because that's the way people see me. And that's the way, you know.
That's how you see yourself.
I was brave and that's how I see myself. Mm-hmm. But I do acknowledge that, you know, I have ancestors who are white, who mm-hmm. I love and respect. Mm-hmm. And I do know that what we saw in that movie, the depiction of white people in the movie, with the exception of
Candy.
Was it Candy? The German guy.
Schultz.
The doctor.
You know, it's not all that white people have to offer. You know, there were white abolitionists.
Right.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's really not the point. And I'm sorry.
That is the point because this is a racial discussion.
It is a racial discussion.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up if we were to compare this. Did you guys all see Lincoln as well?
No, I didn't see Lincoln.
Because Lincoln ends with the fact that there is one member in the House who is so anti-slavery. And what's interesting is that at the end, you see him go home to what you believe is his cook or maid. And then they get into the bed together and you realize this is the love of his life. This is the woman who he's had it as his wife, so to speak, but because of the 13th Amendment not passing, you know, she had to kind of play the role of a domestic, but in their private time, this was his life. So we know that those relationships did exist at that time.
Genuine at that time.
Right.
You just weren't allowed at that period to have any interaction.
All right. So I got a bunch of things to throw in. So one of the things that you're saying, and I think you're touching on too, besides the mental slavery, which I do think is still very prevalent, that there are a lot of things that black people do culturally that they don't understand still comes from slavery in a certain sense, such as soul food, such as calling each other nigga, such as personally, I mean, I guess every place in the world has it, but I've always had a problem with spankings because it made me think of slavery. You know, I mean, when you get in a belt like that, that always bothered me.
I don't. Sorry.
Not to say that my kids won't. Yeah, not to say that my kids won't get spanking. But that whole thing to me, like, I was like, is this
I feel
really?
You, I feel you.
Yeah. So I think that in a sense, first of what you're saying in terms of how that mental slavery or some of that is still carried on, I think that some of that is transformed in the black community in terms of jail culture. Mm-hmm. I think that that's become mm-hmm. very prevalent and has largely seeped its way into black entertainment in a large way mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. general day-to-day culture. I think in terms of, tell me your name again.
Darius.
I think in terms of what you're saying in terms of your ancestry, I mean, when you look back at things like Roots and black history, the reason why we're doing it is because we're saying, like, we're living products of this. Like, mm-hmm. every step of the way, these are the things that came before. So mm-hmm. to say, you know, somewhere down the line, you may have a white ancestor that may have owned slaves. You know, just even more recently, like, when I think about my father and things that he's done, I'm a product of it, but I'm not necessarily that. So there's this, but there's a whole thing of identity that's always been prevalent in white culture, especially that I encountered a lot when I did my actual family tree, and I saw like there was only there when I could only get to like my grandmother's side on my father's side, and maybe my great grandfather's side on my father's side or my mom's side, and then other kids, white kids in my class, were able to trace themselves back to like Louis XIV and stuff like that, and I'm like, wow, there's a lot of things that I've probably missed out on. But, I mean, yeah, I think that history is something that always follows us. And I think that what you were saying about young people is that for them, learning stuff isn't entertaining. You know, young people always have an issue with learning, especially if it's not fun or if it's not in a way that's done that should be in a way that should be engaging. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes that's the hard part about it. Now, to jump real quick back into Django and a couple of other things that I think are going to spark discussion, one of the things that I think a lot of people have glossed over is that one of the main people who I think who sparked Quentin Tarantino to write this movie is a guy named Reginald Hudlin, who's the producer of the film.
Right.
And he's the same dude that did House Party 1, Boomerang.
Shuffle with Robert Townsend.
He did Hollywood Shuffle?
Yeah, the Hudlin.
He did... he was executive producer on The Boondocks. He was he. Producer on Rosewood? I don't know. He might have been.
They're brothers, right? The Hudlin brothers.
Yeah. Reginald Hudlin is the main one. The other brother now, I guess, moved to New York or isn't doing film as much. Reginald, he also did the Black Panther animated series that was supposed to go on BET but didn't. He ran BET for a minute but didn't after a while. And so, in a large way, even though he said that this was all Tarantino's making and his ideas and all that other stuff, I can't help but feel like he influenced it even in the making of it. But he said that they said that in an interview, I think it's on Huffington Post, you can look it up. They have a joint interview where the discussion they had 15 years ago was to them that Roots wasn't realistic. They said that there was a particular scene where a guy has a chance to whip the slave master and he doesn't. And they were like, that's not realistic. You know, they actually had problems with Roots in thinking that it was done in a way that was still very sugar-coated, still very not getting to the point and trying to circumvent black people rising up in any sort of strength, that it was a nobility, you know, the noble slave type thing. And so then after that, Quentin Tarantino, I guess, had the idea of the movie, wrote it, hit Reginald up, and then they looked at it and all that other stuff, and then that's how it came to be largely.
You just kind of blew my mind with that information, because it just dawned on me, all we've ever been taught about slavery is the idea of the subservient noble slave.
Right. Dude, I mean, as far as I remember,
slave uprising.
As far as I remember, like, why is there no? There probably will be now, but why is there no movie on Harriet Tubman?
Right. Why is there no movie on Nat Turner?
Right. There's a movie that they were supposed to be doing about the Haitian Revolution, but it still hasn't come out yet.
All
of America's, and I keep saying America because I wanted to be clear that when it comes to whiteness in the world, there's always money to do tons of period films. I actually now boycott anything that takes place in any kind of like Marie Antoinette, Victorian era, because I'm like, or anything that's Dickensian. Because I'm like, oh, it's okay for your history to constantly have a period film. I refuse to see anything Jane Austen BS. Because I'm like, it's like no one's other story. I've been begging for somebody to do something about the Harlem Renaissance, all of these American periods that never get. And let's not even talk about the other people in this country. I mean, has there been a major Native American film since Dancing with Wolves, which again was about a white man? And it was, but it's like, I get tired of these period films, and that's why I really appreciated this because. But I mean,
it's, samurai.
I do. I appreciate you saying that, you know, because it is what's fantastic about the movie, and probably why I was clapping in the theaters is that. finally we have an opportunity to be seen, to for people to understand how brutally massacred we were. Like, at one point in the movie, because they were talking, I think it was when he was talking about his father, why his father had never, why his father's servant had never cut him. Mm-hmm. I kept thinking, oh my God, centuries of slavery in America. Not 50 years, not 10, not 20, centuries. Mm-hmm. Generations of people were enslaved, were just in just America. Mm-hmm. And so for anybody even to expect that over 300 years of physical and mental slavery for black people to come out of that, it is actually, we should applaud and praise God that we have done what we've done in the 20th century.
Absolutely.
To come out of what that, because that is insane for people to be enslaved and for, and if you, if I mean, if you will, 100 years and some change, you now have a black president of that same country that enslaved them.
Very
a biracial,
crazy.
Excuse me, a biracial president, because you'd have to respect the fact that he is biracial. You know, because that also is another part of our culture that people don't really want to embrace, is that, no, the president is biracial. So, thank you.
I just wanted to say that I think that with respect to why certain movies don't get made, I mean, we can see the response. I mean, I feel like Quentin Tarantino, you know, he got some negative response. Even when Steven Spielberg did Amistad, a lot of people weren't happy that it was like a white man doing a slavery, even when he did The Color Purple.
Yeah.
So I feel like some of the people that maybe have the means to might be a little hesitant because it is such a sensitive topic that is so like looked at with such a fine tooth comb. And even black people will criticize a black director if they don't do it in the right way. It's just, it's very, very sensitive. And I think especially in Hollywood, when you have that kind of, you know, feeling around something, there is a lot of hesitation sometimes.
But be honest, anybody black in Hollywood would not have been able to make this film. They would. I'm telling you, Quentin Tarantino, his vibe.
I have the only reason why
it was made. I bet you, if a black writer, a black director, if Spike Lee came,
I think he could not
get this film made. He couldn't get it supported. And it's interesting because it's the Weinstein Company that's behind this. And you know, that's money.
I thought that when it came out, that to me, it would be the main gripe that black people could have for this movie. That I could say, I was like, this movie, will they let a black person make a movie, a period piece in slavery? No. I want to believe so because Roots came out. All right, now maybe it can be done again. But it doesn't feel like it can. And maybe now that this movie's come out, maybe now, all right, now that a black person can actually do one now.
But I think Spike Lee carries a reputation. So Hollywood is afraid of Spike Lee doing that, you know.
They're
afraid of Spike Lee's perspective, right. But I want to step back a little bit about what you said earlier, Darius, about your children not wanting to see it. And then, Mark 8, you brought it up as well. They're a product of it, but they don't identify with it. Mm-hmm. When you talk about the average 15-year-old today, and you spoke about if it's not visible, it's not really applicable, pretty much, paraphrasing what you said. For the average 15-year-old kid today, his struggle is not black and white. It's not visible enough for him to think that there's a racial problem. Typical 15-year-old black Latino kid, their fight is poverty. Do they connect it to racism? Not so much. Their fight is police brutality. Because what they see in their day-to-day lives, poverty, police brutality. But they don't necessarily see the oppression, which is why the average 15-year-old or your kids are looking at this like, why are we watching this?
And the world they live in is not so black and white. They live in a world that's a lot more diverse.
Right.
And they're dealing with a whole lot of other races.
Yeah, they're not feeling the effects of it because some of us have made it. And so our children are living a life. And in their eyes, this is a good life. What do you mean, you know, it doesn't get any better?
I don't know that that's the case. Not to interrupt you, but my life, I don't think was very diverse. I think, despite my parents' academic background and accomplishments, I grew up in South Central, you know, and the people we saw on a daily basis, they weren't Hispanic. They weren't even white. They were black. You know, and so I don't know that I would have had any more difficult time digesting Roots than my kids should if it was put to me properly. It was just something that was instilled for me from day
one. But we also grew up in an era.
Instilled in me from day one.
We also grew up in an era. We experienced the L.A. riots. We saw that racial tension. Our children, think about your own kids. When was the last time they experienced racism?
Oh, they do on a daily basis. It just doesn't come from white people. It's come from Latinos now.
Mm-hmm. But do your children feel inferior to Latino kids? Because they...
No.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But I didn't feel inferior to anyone else, though.
And the message isn't sent out. It's not a big message out there that blacks are inferior to Latinos. You and I grew up in an era where the message was sent that we were inferior to whites.
But it's a spirit. It's a spirit. And yeah. I think it's a spirit amongst
most immigrants.
We pick
up on it, but our kids don't pick up on it. I mean, I stop any black child today, and I put every penny that I have, and I don't have a lot, that they would tell you that. And I'm quoting a kid. This isn't my aunt. Because first off, they call everybody Mexican. Ain't no Mexican better than me. You know, like their beef with Mexican is because, and I'm just using it from their mentality, their beef with Mexican is what they're hearing their parents say, that, oh, all the Mexicans have moved in here and taken over our neighborhood. But the majority of our children don't necessarily feel inferior. They don't see Mexican or Latinos getting any further ahead than they are. Then when we grew up in an era and we knew, we saw the after effects of whites progressing and us not. So it's really
hard
for
they
our children.
But they do. It might not be with Hispanics, and it might not be as direct, but they do see that in their neighborhoods, Koreans own the grocery stores, the Chinese own the food places, and they do understand that these people are pretty much recent immigrants to this country by the fact that they don't even speak English.
But they don't feel inferior to it.
They don't feel inferior, but there's got to be a subliminal message being sent where anytime you go to a store to purchase something, you know, you don't see any of your own behind the counter.
That's from our perspective. Put your walk in their shoes. You know, and you think about poverty. Kids in the hood, they've got the so-called materialistic things that make them feel like they made it, whether or not mom and dad are going broke for it, right. But they still have it. So it's very hard. It is very hard for those children to relate to racism. It's really hard.
I think you still have to show them. Like, I remember, because my parents put me on history, and I was into black history back then just because... I remember getting a comic. This little thing, I remember getting a comic on Bill Pickett, just showing kids that, all right, there was this person who was basically being bullied. Right. You know what bullied is? Bullied has not gone anywhere because it's because he's black, but it's because he's different. And not only did he come out, he came out on top. That's all these kids need to know with our history. That's the only message I need you to get when I teach my son. Look, we went through some shit. That was awful, and we hear.
But to them, it sounds like old people preaching about some bad stuff that happened to them.
But
they're not internalizing.
But you can say, like, all right, fine, it's not slavery. Are you broke? Do you live somewhere here and some other
but
people
Eli
live
isn't
here?
Though. Look at it.
But Eli won't be judged. But I mean, it's not. Yeah. You can, to me, with black people in that history, you can pick any issue. Fine. It's not your color. Fine. It's because you don't have any money. Fine. It's because you different. It doesn't matter. Fine. Guess what? There's a black person who has money. Guess what? You still got, when I'm a white person, I'm walking, you better not be looking straight at me with your eyes.
But they've got to feel that anger and that passion. Our kids, what they don't feel, we feel that anger, that passion. They don't have it. What gets them angry? You know.
I don't even know that I'm angry. I want to be informed. I want to be informed. And I remember when I wanted a dog and I wanted a German Shepherd, and my father blew up and started knocking cups off the counter and throwing plates and telling me that we would never have a German Shepherd because those were the dogs that the police used to sick on him. And I was like, Daddy, I just wanted a dog, man.
Exactly. That's the key.
And so at the time, I didn't understand. But now that I'm grown, and it's not even a distant memory. It's fresh in my mind. And I do understand. And so to make excuses about how kids don't relate to the message, I couldn't relate to the message then either, but it was instilled.
And you got it
me. And I held on to it until I was able to
But they're growing up in a different world. I'm not making excuses.
And we
excuses.
Were growing up in a different world, too.
I'm not making
we,
excuses.
We were fresh out of the civil rights era. And
but what have these children, they haven't felt anything like that. It's
but see, but you know what? But you know what? You know what? You guys both have valid points, but at the same time, you both have valid points, but they kind of counter each other because on one hand, the kids are removed from the experiences, just like we were removed from the experiences. But then there are things that happen socially, nationwide, that bring everything back to center. For us, it was Rodney King and the LA riots. For these kids, it's Trayvon Martin. They see that. Let's call it cuss. You wanna fight? Payback is a thing you got to see. Me.